Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. Coming up in the next segment, we'll play our 7 o'clock intro, our 7 o'clock segment, where we talked about how we can live in a society where a 12-year-old can stab a woman in her garage, like a premeditated stabbing in her garage. Like, what is going on there? And I think there's a lot of obvious things that we know and we've talked about, we've heard before. But I want to introduce a new argument or a new ingredient into the mix that I've never thought much of, or at least I haven't presented here. And it's from Neil Postman, his book called The Disappearance of Childhood. I think it's interesting and I think it's a part of it. So we did that and we'll play that for you next. But let's start off with our opening segment where we talked about women getting punched in the face in the street and Donald Trump at the wake of that NYPD officer. And we had some great phone calls and we got into a whole thing about the importance of virtue with this book I just started reading called The Pursuit of Happiness by Jeffrey Rosen, how classical writers on virtue inspired the lives of the founders and defined America. And clearly we're light years away from that. Here's our opening to the show. Argument about the 7 and 12 year old who stabbed a woman in her garage in Houston. And there's all the normal arguments about that in America and society and blah, blah. But I want to present a different argument that I've never presented before. And I think it's one ingredient in how could this possibly have happened. I don't think it's the most important thing, but I think it's something worth considering. So I'm excited to present that at 7 o'clock. And then John Nolte is going to be here at 8. And we'll wrap up our week together. Donald Trump was at the wake of a New York City police officer yesterday who was shot and killed during just a basic traffic stop. He and another officer approached a car that was parked illegally. And there were two males inside the car. They're not men. These aren't men. I don't know if you've noticed that, but whenever we talk about murderers like this, I don't use the word men. Men to me, a man to me is something more than just you had puberty. You know what I mean? It's more than just a physical age. You're not a woman. A woman's a little different. Oh, who makes this point? This is not my point. Camille Paglia makes this point. That a woman does have more of a biological concept, but a man, you have to become a man. You have to be made into a man. I don't think that's necessarily true about women too. There's attributes of being a real woman more so than just biological, but that's her point. But you have to become a man, and someone who would do this is not a man. They're a male. They're biologically male, but they're not a man. Anyway, they murder one of the police officers. Just shoot him, kill him. So Trump's at the wake, says we got to stop it. We got to get back to law and order. We have to do a lot of things differently because this is not working. The other guy that was in the car had 14 prior arrests. I don't remember this ever being a thing. Bad things have always happened. There's always been murder. People have shot police officers. That's like, I don't ever remember ever in my life. Oh yeah, that guy's been arrested 14 times. I don't remember ever that being a thing. And I don't ever remember in my mind, whenever I hear about a murder, being like, oh yeah, that guy's probably been arrested a bunch already. I don't remember that ever. This feels different. I don't know if it is. I think it feels different. 14 times this guy's been arrested, including attempted murder and robbery. Was out on bail for other crimes he committed, out on bail. The murderer has been arrested 21 times by NYPD. And maybe now he'll spend the rest of his life in jail. Now, murder's one thing. How about this thing that's happening in New York City now? By the way, CNN telling us that crime's actually going down And Trump is using this. He's using this perception to for his own political advantage to scare people in the suburbs. Okay. A new thing apparently now is in New York City, maybe other cities too, is just punching women as they walk down the street. Just punching them in the face. This is ABC7 in New York City.
This news exclusive. Pichardo says he didn't say a word, just stared at her, then broke her jaw.
He hit me very, very strong over here. And he break everything here. Oh. Everything's break.
It happened yesterday around 5 p.m. on Grand Avenue near Dean Street. Pichardo was a school bus.
By the way, next to a giant building with a mural along the entire length of the building that says Black Lives Matter.
5 p.m. on Grand Avenue near Dean Street. Pichardo was a school bus aide and was returning from work, just steps away from home when she was slugged. Her brother owns a restaurant across the street from where she lives. He and this employee chased the suspect down. Johan Flores says he was still standing there. When they confronted him, he denied attacking Pichardo, cold and emotionless. They followed him for several blocks and stopped him from fleeing until police arrived. Cops arrested 33-year-old Franz Judy. The suspect was charged with misdemeanor assault, meaning he's not bail eligible. He'll be released back onto the street. And that's the part that has the victim and her family frustrated and afraid.
He's back. So they're like, there's security camera footage. He's walking down the street. He's standing there, just punches her in the face and then walks on. And we're like, all right, this is great. So he's back on the street. You're free to go. How many times do you think this guy was arrested? The under over is 12. That's the game, under over 12. He's actually under. He's under 12. Seven. He's been arrested seven times. And he's now back. Now, this isn't a one-time thing. It's a thing that women are posting now on TikTok or Instagram after they get punched.
You guys, I was literally just walking and a man came up and punched me in the face. Oh my God, it hurts so bad. I can't even talk. Literally, I fell to the ground and now this giant goose egg is forming and I'm like, oh my God, it looks so crazy. So I just got punched in the face walking home. I was literally like leaving class. I turned the corner and I was looking down and I was looking at my phone and like texting, and then out of nowhere, this man just came up and hit me in the face. I'm like,
and by the way, I don't know if these ever get reported, if these ever get put into crime statistics for CNN to be like, oh, crime's actually down.
Actually in shock right now. I'm just like walking home because what else do you do?
So I have fallen victim to the men.
So she's out with her friends now at dinner. So she's taking the defense mechanism right now of laughing about it with her friends as she has an ice pack on her face.
In New York City, lifting an elbow or trying to punch innocent girls on the street, except I wasn't on my phone. I was with my coworkers walking in Times Square. So be safe out there. It's my first TikTok. She's so pretty.
So I've fallen victim. So it's like a thing. Like girls in New York City know this is the thing that you walk down the street and get punched. I've fallen victim to it. Ah, it got me. It got me. You know, it's just a part of life. Just get punched in the face. And it finally came for me. So here's the question. This is the question. I'm going to ask this to John Nolte coming up as well. Remind me to ask John this. Will a white progressive woman who lives in the city, who gets punched in the face by a random guy on the street, still vote Democrat in November? That's what I want to know. They break down polls into demographic groups. I want an exit poll of, I don't care, like Black, Hispanic, sure, you can ask that question, I guess, whatever. The exit poll I want is white college-educated women and white college-educated women who have been punched in the face by a random guy on the street. How have you voted? White college-educated women, they're going to be like 70% Democrat. You would think white college-educated women who have been randomly punched in the face by someone on the street would be 90% Republican. You would think that would be traumatic of enough experience that to radicalize you to vote for Republican. And by Republican in this case, I mean someone who would write policy that says if you've been arrested 12 times, you should stay in prison. Like I have a 12 strike rule. You know, like an inning and a half, I'll give you of strikes. Remember, we used to have 3 strikes. We got rid of that. It was too mean. 3 strikes. Oh, no, too many strikes. Or not enough strikes. Okay, how about 12? 12 strikes? We have a 12 strike law. That's what I'm like. Maybe these women will then vote for those people to institute a 12 strike law. Because if this isn't radicalizing, I don't know what is. I saw someone wrote, vote like your face depends on it. We're going to do on Mondays for a while. I don't know how long it'll take. We're going to talk about how to change someone's mind. We're going to talk about how to change someone's mind. And there's prerequisites, there's setups, it's a process, all these things. And we'll lay it all out every Monday for a while. I think it'll be worthwhile. Now, there's also the shortcut version. Maybe in my new updated version of my pamphlet, I'll include an updated version of, you can also just wait till they get punched in the face by someone. You don't punch. You wait till they get punched. And like this last woman, she's like, it's a matter of time before eventually they'll get punched. And then also that will change their mind. But maybe not. Maybe not too. That's the other thing. It may not. There are some people who are so demented that they could get punched in the face and feel bad for the puncher because society has been so hard on them because of institutional racism that this person feels like they have no other outlet other than to punch women in the face. Right? So I could totally see someone coming to that conclusion as well. And in that case, I don't know what, there's nothing you can do. Real quick, before I forget, I want to give a shout out to Ron DeSantis. When's the last time you thought of Ron DeSantis? Shout out to Ron. These last couple days, we've been talking about squatters. Right? And I have a concern that illegal aliens are going to take advantage of these ridiculous squatters laws that some states have, particularly in New York, where you get 30 days. But it's not even that. We had the dog, the bounty hunter of squatters the other day on the show. It's a sentence I love to say. And he's like, oh, yeah, some people, they'll just roll in and say it's mine right away. And you have to wait 30 days before you can say it's mine. Like, it's mine now, done. So it's horrible. So Ron DeSantis just signed a law in Florida saying you can't do that. Ron DeSantis does this often. I've never seen a governor and I've never seen a legislature like Florida move so fast on anything ever. HB 621. He says, if you're a victim of squatting, you simply fill out a form, give it to your local sheriff, and the sheriff is instructed to go and remove the people who are inhabiting your dwelling illegally. And this will happen very quickly, period. That's the end of it. That's so good. That's so good. Right now, all we hear about is the police. Well, the story one of the main stories we shared. Well, there's a couple stories in New York City. One was the woman went to go confront the squatters and they murdered her. That's one. The other one was the woman changed the locks and the police came and arrested her for violating the tenant's rights. And it was not a tenant. Okay, so the police arrested the homeowner. So DeSantis comes in, passes the law, boom, just like that, says, nope, you're gone. And all we hear about is the cops are like, oh, the cops can't do anything. Our hands are tied. The cops arm, and here Ron DeSantis passes the law. Yeah, no, you're gone, you're out. Sheriff coming, get you done. Like a sane society would. I love DeSantis does this. There's a couple things DeSantis, it's like he just goes on Twitter and sees a problem, like sees a thing happening. And he's like, oh yeah, that's not going to happen in Florida. And then they pass a bill in a week. And he signs it and it's done and there's no fanfare and no one ever mentions it and no one ever talks about it and Florida gets better. I've never seen anything like that. So this is if you squat, second degree felony charge, first degree felony charges against people who sell or lease residential property they don't own. And that's the thing too. These squatters will come in and then they'll sublet it out. And like, who are those people too? Who are the people who will sublet a house that's being squatted? He said, we're putting an end to the squatter scam in Florida. While other states are siding with the squatters, we need a better word than squatters. We're protecting property owners and criminals and punishing criminals looking to game the system. So that's just done. Boom. Law over. No longer a thing in Florida. Awesome. Well done, Ron DeSantis. Meanwhile, let's get back to police here. This is what's going on in Baltimore.
In the Southern District on Tuesday, there was a plea for officers to work overtime. Minutes later, it went citywide.
Overtime available on today's date, trolley shift, Southern District. Anyone interested?
Baltimore's Southern Police District is the city's largest district, 61,000 residents. And on Tuesday afternoon, sources tell us at one point there were three police officers on patrol. Just seconds after the plea for officers hit the airwaves, so did pleas for help.
If anyone in Sector 2 can come clear, we have a physical child abuse at Morrill Park, and there's a 10-year-old at the location with bruises all over his body. Okay, we also have a common assault. We have a missing person, 2640 B. Huron Street.
10 minutes after that child abuse call was transmitted, it appears there were still no officers en route.
We still have that physical child abuse.
Yes, sir. And be advised, we are now holding 10 calls. No priority ones. We still have the physical child abuse and the common assault.
And it's heartbreak.
Holding 10 calls. Oh, and there's that child abuse that no one's responded to yet. There are cities who don't have a police force for large periods of time. It was Pittsburgh. We've been following Pittsburgh a bit. Pittsburgh, they're closing police stations. And you show up at the police station and there's a box. And you press the button and it directs you to 911. So that's what's happening in our cities right now. How do you think that's going to go? How's it going to end up? And then let's say you live in one of those cities and someone, like an illegal alien, comes and squats in your house. They won't even check out an abused child. You think they're going to work with you to get the squatter out of your house? You're totally on your own until you try to do something about it in these cities, in which case then they'll be here to arrest you. Okay, so let's compare that. So Baltimore, we have no police. And you're totally on your own. Here's the sheriff in Santa Rosa County.
As to the person, we don't know which homeowner shot at him. I guess they think that they did something wrong, which they did not. If somebody's breaking in your house, you're more than welcome to shoot them in Santa Rosa County. We prefer that you do, actually. So whoever that was, you're not in trouble. Come see us. We have a gun safety class we put on every other Saturday. And if you take that, you'll shoot a lot better and hopefully you'll save the taxpayers money.
Okay. So there's the story behind this. There's a man, Brandon Harris, a male, wanted on multiple arrests, of course. Let me quote NPR. Harris was leaping fences and breaking into houses before ultimately jumping headfirst out a window where he was apprehended. At one point, Johnson noted that in one of the four houses he broke into, a homeowner shot at him and missed. And the sheriff had a message for that person who had not come forward. So that's what he was talking about. He's like, hey, listen, if you shot at this guy, you're not in trouble. We have a gun safety course. You can work on your aim and we'll be sure like you're fine. You're okay. If someone comes in your house, you're allowed to shoot them. In fact, we'd prefer it. So that sheriff said later, if somebody breaks into your house in Santa Rosa County and you shoot and kill them, the chances of them reoffending after that are zero. And we like those odds. So obviously NPR, very upset at this. The sheriff, just to be clear. So I spent the last 12 years in California. I still need to like reacclimate back to sane society where like, of course you would have a sheriff say that. What else would a sheriff say if not that? Yeah, someone breaks in your house, you should shoot them. And if you kill them, they'll never reoffend. So like that, of course, we should say it. But I've been in California for so long that still like jars me. It shouldn't jar me at all. But NPR is mortified. Johnson's advice, legally accurate, several defense attorneys told NPR. Florida's Stand Your Ground law lets people use deadly force to prevent a forcible felony, including home evasion. And the intruder doesn't need to have a weapon. Quote, there's no requirement they be armed before someone can exercise the right to defend their property. But the, oh, by the way, yesterday there were there was a stabbing, a mass stabbing in Rockford, Illinois. This guy, 22 years old, I think, smoked some marijuana. It was laced with something. That's his excuse. He went nuts and he stabbed a postal worker, stabbed a, or no, he didn't. He went, broke into someone's house and beat a 15-year-old with a bat. And so there's an example of someone who went into a house without a weapon, but found one and murdered a 15-year-old girl. And then two other people, murdered four people. Severely, seven other injuries that are in serious condition in the hospital. Right now. It's happened yesterday. But went in, this happened yesterday, 2 days ago, and went in with no weapon. Found one, murdered someone. So in Florida, you don't, even if someone comes in without a weapon, that doesn't matter. But the attorneys were aghast at how brazen the sheriff was in seeming to delight in potentially needless death. Who are you to say it's needless? What do you mean? What do you mean needless death? I cannot agree with the sheriff that it's ever preferred to shoot someone, says this person from the Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. There's oftentimes that somebody is not an imminent threat to you. How's the homeowner supposed to find that out? Listen, you would think that you would be able to walk down a sidewalk in New York City and not be an imminent threat. But you can't. Someone called in a moment ago, Trucker John in New Mexico, and said these are just stories from women who have posted it on social media, which is weird to do, I think. So like I would never have that reaction. But whatever, I guess people do that. How many more are keeping to themselves about their stories of getting punched in the face? So how's the homeowner supposed to find out that this person who's breaking into your house is not of imminent threat? NPR, of course, said it's racist. Florida defense attorneys who are accusing him of offering wildly irresponsible advice that could lead to needless loss of life and aggravate racial tensions. How is this aggravating racial tensions? How is that aggravating racial tensions? Why would that? NPR, serious question here, NPR. Talk to me here. Why would that comment aggravate racial tensions? Of course, he never said anything about race. So why would that aggravate racial tensions? Are you assuming, National Public Radio, are you assuming that this gentleman, Brandon Harris, who has been arrested multiple times and was breaking into other homes, are you assuming, NPR, that this gentleman is black? Oh, my. Are you suggesting, NPR? Just to be clear, I'm not. I didn't bring up race. NPR says that this sheriff's comments could aggravate racial tensions. So I'm offended. I'm offended, NPR. Are you suggesting that it's black people who disproportionately break into people's houses? Better watch out about that one, NPR. That seems a little racy to me. Racisty. That seems racisty. 866-95-PATRIOT. 866-95-PATRIOT. Take your phone calls. There's also an interview that's making the rounds with Jordan Peterson and this guy, Destiny. Have you seen this? Have you heard of this Destiny guy? All right, it was good. We got to play part of it because remember yesterday we were talking about what's the most important issue facing this country? And the second most important thing for Democrats, the number one was preserving democracy, and we talked about how that's not a thing. And the second thing was climate change. It's like, really? Is it really? Like, do you really care about that, or do you just think you're supposed to say that? To be a Democrat in good standing, do you just feel like you're supposed to say that you care about that? Or do you actually really think that's the biggest issue facing our country? back to Breitbart News Daily. The book is called The Disappearance of Childhood. I think it's one of the reasons why we have Drag Queen Story Hour, for one, and why we have 12-year-olds stabbing adults in their garage. All right, I want to get to the topic here, but before I do, I just want to open up something really quickly, and then we'll move on from it. My dearest friend, they had a miscarriage a couple days ago. I was talking to him about it yesterday. And I just want to mention this because I think miscarriages are the, like, there's still like a taboo around it. It's the least talked about, most common experience that people have. And it doesn't make sense to me why it's not talked. It shouldn't be not talked about. I don't have anything to add. I don't have anything to say about it right now, other than if this is a thing you've ever experienced or are experiencing or have recently, whatever, you need to know you're not alone. My wife had one, our most recent kid, so I guess it was like 2 years ago or something. And when you tell people, everyone we told was like, oh yeah, we had two. And it's like, what? Like, you know, like everyone we talked about had this experience and never talked about. And I just found that really odd. And I don't think that's good. I don't think that's healthy. So I just want more people to be open about their experiences with a miscarriage so that they can, so we can all help other people. There should be no shame around this thing at all. None at all. That's it. I just want to put that right there. Hopefully that's helpful. All right. We got to get to this story. And I want to add something to this conversation that I think is a part of it. I don't know if it's the most important ingredient to it all. It may be like the bay leaf of the chicken broth. The recipe says to put a bay leaf in, and I'll put a couple bay leaves in. I don't know if it makes a big difference. I guess it does. It's in the recipe. But I don't know. I've made chicken broth without bay leaves, and I'm never like, where's the bay leaf? But I, like, maybe it's more than a bay leaf. But anyway, this happened in Texas.
Hospital after Harris County Sheriff deputies say she was stabbed by two preteens.
So if these kids have the ability to do that, do we need to start watching the kids around here?
Preteens. 59-year-old woman stabbed in her garage by two preteens. A preteen, not a word that's often used, that would be someone below the age of 13. It was a 12 and a 7-year-old. The 12-year-old stabbed a woman in her garage.
Investigators say security video is playing a big part in this investigation.
Yeah, Bill, it's showing these two kids, not one but two, neither of which are teenagers. The youngest just 7 years old, the oldest 12 years old. And that 12-year-old boy, he is facing charges of aggravated assault for allegedly stabbing the woman that owns this home right inside her own garage. And why they did this, Bill? All over an argument.
At first glance, it's just two kids riding their bikes down April Valley Court Saturday afternoon. What the camera doesn't show you is the woman who lives here, the victim in this situation. Police saying she was arguing with the two boys, just 7 and 12 years old.
From what I've gathered, it was just a verbal altercation.
But fast forward just 10 minutes, the kids come back, this time with gloves on and with a weapon. Watch as they run up the driveway to the woman standing in the garage. We're stopping the video here because the 12-year-old boy stabs the woman.
Female appeared to have several stab wounds to her abdominal area. Several.
Deputies called out here about 10 minutes later, not by the victim, but by her brother.
He just came at the right time. He opened the door and saw that she was stabbed.
Several stab wounds. What in the world? Can you imagine? Can you imagine? As a 12, think about when you were 12 or you have a 12-year-old. Could you imagine a 12-year-old committing that type of violence against someone? A stabbing, a shooting involves, there's distance with a shooting, but to go home, put gloves on, grab a knife, ride your bicycle back, and then approach a human being and stab them multiple times. A stabbing is much more intimate. The idea of you holding a knife and pushing it into somebody, like if that doesn't grotesque you, and like, you know what I mean? Like if you're not and you keep doing it, you're on a totally different planet. So this is a couple days ago, and I wonder if we'll ever get more to this story. I think we can make a few assumptions, can we not? I doubt we'll ever hear from the father of these children. The mother did come out and say, "I'm sorry my son committed the incident," which is like so perfect. Of course, that's what this mother would say. "I'm sorry my son committed the incident." See how passive that is? A buddy of mine is in the DA's office, and that's what people will do when they commit a crime and they're talking about it. They're very detailed in their analysis of the day. I woke up at 8 o'clock, and I had this for breakfast, and I got in my white Camry, and I drove on this street to this place, and then there was an incident that happened, and then afterwards I went home and I had chicken for dinner. Right, that's like detailed, and then there's a yada yada yada, an incident occurred. And that was the murder. I'm sorry my son committed the incident. Beautiful, beautiful example of taking zero responsibility for a thing. So that's the mother. I'm sure there's no father. And the second assumption we can make is that these two children are fed a steady diet of, I don't know, I guess we could characterize it generally as filth all day long. That's a general category, filth. I think that's fair, right? You could put violence, anger, death, whatever, all that stuff. If there is a dad around, I bet the dad beats the mother. So that's what the kids are taking in constantly. Just filth. There's a big overall umbrella of filth. And that's what these kids have grown up in. All right, there are obvious... First of all, let's lament. It's worth taking a lament for this. Like, how could this happen? There's many different directions we can go. I want to try to add an ingredient here that I've never presented before. And I'm going to steal this from... There are the obvious points. Right? I want to try to make an argument that's a little less obvious. That's what I'm doing. So I want to make this from Neil Postman. Neil Postman wrote a book called The Disappearance of Childhood. Wrote it in like 1999. So I lost the original book. When we moved from San Diego to Tennessee about 7 months ago, our moving truck burned to the ground. So I laugh now, I chuckle, but we lost everything, including all my books, which I'm super annoyed about. So the insurance has been good. I got all the books back, but I don't have any of my notes, so I'm super annoyed. So when this story first happened, I didn't have the book, so I had to get the book, and I just got the book last night, so I couldn't find exactly the things I was looking for a full presentation here. But the gist of the book from Neil Postman called The Disappearance of Childhood. Here's the argument, the general argument. Prior to the 16th century, there was no distinction between adult and children. You were born and you were an infant, and then you went right to adult. Every painting prior to the 16th century, you can look up any painting from look up Peter Bruegel, B-R, how do you spell Bruegel? Bruegel, B-R-E-U-G-E-L. Look up a Peter Bruegel painting, and the kids are engaging in the same usually sinful activities that all the adults are as well. There's in his paintings prior to the 16th century, there's no to say, like, the kids are engaging in the same drinking, sexual related things, whatever. Kids and adults are the exact same, except kids are just smaller. Kids were treated the same when it came to crimes, right? Like the kids would be charged with murder and hanged, tried as adults. There was no such thing as being tried as an adult. You were an adult. There was baby and adult, and that was for all of human history. Then we had this period after the 16th century where we created this idea of childhood, where you go from adult to child, from baby to child to adult. And I think this is good. And this is a nice development in humans, is that we've created this stage of life called childhood. Now, Neil Postman's argument for how this happened was the printing press. He said childhood was an outgrowth of literacy. So before the printing press, you became an adult when you could talk. Then after the printing press, you became an adult when you could read. You couldn't understand God until you could read the Bible. You couldn't understand literature until you could read a book. You couldn't understand science or appreciate whatever, anything, unless you could read about it. So we created this like this period of life where you learned how to read so that you could then become be considered an adult. You with me so far? This is it. So we went from, and that's when schools were created. Where kids went the kids used to be mini adults, like miniature adults, like short in stature adults. And then we considered them uninformed adults. So we had to create this bridge from infancy to adulthood. And we call it childhood. And for about 300 years or so, we've been redefining and trying to figure out what it means to be a child and how to best raise children into being good adults. And not just adults who can read, but adults who have virtue as well. So that's the theory from Neil Postman. Is that cool? So here's the bad news is, he believes, we are returning to the day, when there was no distinction between kids and adults. So where there used to be a distinction between adulthood, let me word it like this. Let me go back again one more time. For all of human existence, it was baby to adult. Then, since about the 16th century, we created baby, childhood, adult. And now we're going back to no such thing as childhood. In many different ways. We had this period the last few hundred years where we had such things as adult themes, adult images, adult conversations, adult experiences, adult language. Adult clothing. There was adult clothing and kids' clothing. There were things that were just for kids. There were things that were just for adults. And of course, in the Venn diagram of life, there are things that overlap, of course, right? But there's kids' things and there's adult things. There were kids' expectations and then things that were just for adults. But now we're getting rid of that. We've blurred the lines for a long time, and I would argue right now there are almost no lines. With television in particular, kids are exposed to all the adult themes, all the adult images, all the adult language. And I think we're now getting back to the era where even sexually, we've seen these last few decades, I think the sexualization of children. I think we've seen the sexualization of kids with advertisements. I'll give you an example. The beach. Been to the beach recently? Have you ever, in your entire life, until relatively recently, seen 12-year-olds in bikinis? Like, of course, a bikini never used to be a thing at all, of course. And then it became a thing for women. And then it got younger and younger. And now there's little girls wearing bikinis. Like, what in the world is happening here? So we have the sexualization of kids. We see that there's a blurring of lines when it comes to kids sports and adult sports. Like kids sports used to be unsupervised play. Like just the kids would go play stickball or whatever, right? But now we don't have that anymore. Now even kids sports are modeled more and more after sports for adults. Like when I was growing up, we didn't even have uniform. It's like he's like, hey, wear a red shirt or something. Here's like your penny. What do you call it? A penny? Like you go to the game and they just like give you the red penny. And that's the penny. And now I always thought it was weird that kids get like these like fancy uniforms when they show up for like your rec league, whatever. And we'd like dress up kids like they're pro ball players. Jack the other day, Wednesday had his first flag football game, which is cool, right? 7 years old, flag football, whatever. There were refs there that were wearing the stripes, and the first play of the game, the ref threw a flag. Like threw a yellow flag out of his pocket, threw it. It's like offsides or something. Like, man, they're seven. They're like, what they're doing at all? What are you talking about? He threw a flag on the field. Like it was like one step away. Like maybe next year he'll have like a speaker system and go to the middle of the, like, holding number 12, for like 5 yards. Like, what are you talking about? They're seven. So we've totally eliminated in every realm of life, silly ones like that, but also really important ones, like violence. We've eliminated any line, any wall that there was between child and adult. And I think one of the consequences of that is you're going to have 7 and 12 year olds murdering people with a knife. I guess he's a murderer, but stabbing people with a knife. Does that make sense? There used to be no difference between kids and adults. Then we created a difference. And that was good. And now we're getting away with that. And now we're going back to an era where there is no difference, because kids are bombarded with all of these things, and that's not good. That's not good at health. That's what I say to these kids. I'm certain, like I'm not certain there's no dad. I would bet big money that there's no dad, but I can't be certain of that. I am certain that these kids are fed a steady diet of filth. There's no question. If you did an audit of the inputs that this 12-year-old has in his daily life, you would be sickened by it. By what this 12-year-old sees every day, watches every day, sees on his TikTok and Instagram every day, plays on video games every single day, reads on the internet every single day, it would be appalling. And in the past, we would have called those adult things. And then even within the adult realm, we would call those good or bad. But we've gotten rid of that. Like, if you're an adult, there's no such thing as good or bad, right? But now they're not even adult things anymore. They're just things that kids have not only access to, but a steady diet of. They can't get away from it in many cases. I'll say one more thing here, and then we can take some phone calls. 866-95-PATRIOT. I'll say one more thing at risk of being a prude, but it's fine. We don't watch TV in the house. We'll watch some. Well, we watch Little House on the Prairie. I think that's it. Watch Little House on the Prairie. Oh, and the kids, we'll watch Winnie the Pooh. Watch some Winnie the Pooh stuff from time to time if they're sick or something. So that's our media intake in the Slater family. We'll turn on the TV for some sporting events though, right? So we've been watching March Madness, but whenever we do that, I always have the clicker in my hand and I turn it off during commercial breaks. I'll turn it off during the commercial. So we'll watch the game, commercial, boom, turn the TV off. I'll turn it back on in 2 minutes. Don't come at me for me. Oh, Slater, you're sheltering your kids. I'm not sheltering them. I'm not making them grow up in a bubble. I'm raising them in a greenhouse. I'm raising them in a way where they can actually build their roots. I'm raising them in a way where they can be best prepared to be planted out in the wilderness that is the world when the time is right. Because I know what the world is, and I know how to prepare them for this world, but it's up to me, and I'm not leaving it up to the whims of the advertisers or our fine friends in Hollywood to do it for me. So we'll watch a little March Madness. We'll watch Yale get crushed by San Diego, whatever, but I'll turn the commercial off because I don't think the commercial's themes are appropriate for the lens of a 6-year-old girl. Now, every once in a while, I'll miss one, right? I'll run to the kitchen or something and I'll miss it and I'll come back and I'll see the commercial and it's like, oh yeah, that's why I do this. It'll be, here's a commercial with two dudes holding hands. Or there was one the other day I missed. It was a WWE, like a wrestling commercial with two girls wearing bikinis punching each other. And my daughter's like, what's that? It's like, oh, I don't need to explain that to my 6-year-old daughter. And we've never needed to. This is my point. We never needed to explain that because 6-year-olds never saw that stuff before. And I get it. You can be like, oh, you think I'm a bad parent because I let my kids, whatever. You can come to whatever conclusion you want about you or me. I don't care. I'm just telling you that before the TV was a thing in everyone's home, kids were never saw this stuff. They never saw this stuff. Before kids had access to all their own screens, they never saw this stuff, ever. And I would just like to go back to that era. And they're 6, so I can. In my house, we live in the 50s, all right? The music, the TV, the movies, it's unbelievable. And we're desensitized to it. We don't even recognize how horrific it is. The anarchy, the chaos, the filth that our kids are bombarded with, it's unlike anything ever before. Neil Postman, he said, children are becoming desensitized to violence and suffering, constantly exposed to graphic imagery through media and video games. We went to a soccer game the other day, and me and Jack and the guys behind us, there are two guys behind us, maybe like 25 or something, they were dropping F-bombs, like nothing. And it was like, it's like crazy, it's like ridiculous, like, hey man, do you want an effing hot dog? It's like, man, like you're not even, that doesn't even add anything to what you're trying to do here. Like just normal conversation, F-bombs, you don't even know what you're saying. And they were so out of it, they didn't even recognize that there's a 7-year-old right in front of them. So my 7-year-old turned around and said, shut the F, no, I didn't. I turned around and said, guys, what are we doing? I'm like, oh, sorry, man. It's like, yeah. Like, wake up. But 7-year-olds are dropping F-bombs too, so what do I know? Let me play 866-95-PATRIOT. Let me play this Neil Postman, and then I'll take a break. We'll take your phone calls. Phones are filling up here, which is fine. I have no idea where this is going to go. I have no idea. I am prepared for attacks, I guess. I don't intend to be, but whatever. 866-95-PATRIOT, 866-95-PATRIOT. Or everyone will call in and be like, the great point. I've never heard that before. Let me play this Neil Postman. Neil Postman talks really, really slow, so I'm going to put this on 1.5 speed and see if we can follow this here.
As children move toward adulthood, we reveal these secrets to them in ways we believe they are prepared to manage. Now, that's why there is such a thing as children's literature. But television makes this arrangement quite impossible. Television operates virtually around the clock. It requires a constant supply of novel and interesting information to hold its audience. This means that all adult secrets, social, sexual, physical, and the like, all of them are revealed. Television forces the entire culture to come out of the closet, taps every existing taboo, incest, divorce, promiscuity, corruption, adultery, sadism. Each is now merely a theme for one or another television show.
Kids are bombarded like never before. And also advertising, like I don't even want my kids to be advertised to. You know, I don't want an outside thing shaping their desires. Neil Postman says, childhood now isn't a special stage of development, but as it's seen as another segment of our consumer market to be exploited by the same techniques that are used to the adults. So when you see video of kids dancing sexually or what kids are wearing or smoking pot or whatever, this is all, we're being led by people who do not think that childhood is a special stage of maturity that deserves attention and focus to raising children to become adults. We're being led by people who once again view childhood as not a special stage of development, but as just mini adults. And the results of that are this. How's it going? Hey, thanks for listening to Breitbart News Daily. The full show, of course, is on SiriusXM podcast, SiriusXM, if you subscribe, on the app. And you can watch the second 2 hours of the show on the First TV, channel 347 on DirecTV and Roku and Pluto and Samsung TVs and anywhere else you stream on the First TV. Coming up on Monday's show, 7 o'clock, we're going to talk with Tom Barrett. He is running for Congress in Michigan's 7th district. That is Lansing. So there's a big seat that a Republican could win in Michigan, which obviously is essential for this race as well. So this race is a big deal. We'll talk about it on Monday's show. Spread the word.